But you know what you're doing? You're chasing a ghost while the whole fucking network goes all around you.
You just want me to nail some low-level mullah crackadola so you can check that box on your resume that says while you were in Pakistan, you got a real terrorist. But the truth is, you don't understand Pakistan, and you don't know Al-Qaeda. Either give me the team I need to follow this lead, or the other thing you're going to have on your resume is being the first station chief to be called before a congressional committee for subverting the efforts to capture or kill bin Laden.
On episode number 52 of the Cut Print Film podcast, the gents are on the hunt for Osama bin Laden. Here are your hosts, Jeff, Dave, and Chris.
Hello, it's the Cut Print Film Podcast, episode 52. Ooh. You know what that means. Happy birthday to us and Chris and Jeff and me.
Well, that is us. There's no one else here.
Yeah.
I'm your host, or one of them, Dave Costell.
I'm also a host. My name is Jeff Rollins.
Yeah, Jeff's really excited. I'm another host. My name's Chris Evangelista.
All right, we got to blow out the candles, make a wish.
So, Jeff's not having any of this, so let's move on. We are a movie podcast. We talk about films. We also have a website called cutprintfilm.com.
It's chock full of reviews and interviews and all sorts of those things.
Editorials.
Chock full of chocolate, too.
Yeah, there's plenty of it. And the good chocolate, not that cheap Easter chocolate.
Yeah, no thanks.
Mm-hmm.
No Russell Stovers from us.
That.
So, what's going on in the world of film this week, fellas?
Boy, what a terrible week for opening movies.
It was. Not just in content, but also at the box office. None of them did that well.
Holy hell.
It's Jeff Rollins with our box office report.
No, I have no numbers. but I did see one of the films that opened on Friday. I saw
the second best. Oh,
no, not second best. Marigold Hotel.
we decided not to cover that.
Yes, because we're all under 218 years old. I went and saw Unfinished Business, starring Vince Vaughn, Dave Franco, and Tom Wilkinson.
What a cast!
Yeah.
Man, you know what? I like most of those people. I don't even mind Vince Vaughn, but he's not had a good career lately.
Was Tom Wilkinson playing LBJ in this?
Yeah.
No.
Racist LBJ?
No, he was playing Timothy McWinters, an elderly salesman who joins Vince Vaughn's trio of salesmen as they start their own company after Vaughn is he decides to quit his job due to a pay cut.
Like Jerry Maguire?
Exactly. The film opens with a Jerry Maguire moment with none of the humor.
Oh, okay.
Or likability of Tom Cruise.
All right, then. Well done.
So, yeah, what this film is about, if you haven't seen it, and if you live in this this continent, you probably haven't seen Unfinished Business, because it made around $4 million, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, something like that.
4.8.
That's, ooh, boy, is that bad.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take $4.8 million.
Oh, certainly.
But for a film.
That's number 10 in March. Ooh. Like opening in 10th place
that's
in
bad.
March.
Well, this is the first week in March.
Yeah.
So that is, oh my goodness.
That's embarrassing.
That's abysmal. So, yeah, this film stars those three as three salesmen who are trying to close a deal with this company. And they sell – it's called Swarf, and it's a real thing. It's an industrial byproduct. They're tiny little metal shavings.
Is this like that stuff you put on your ball so it doesn't sweat?
That's
no,
an interesting
no
thing
sweat
to put on your testicles.
Metal shavings?
Are you talking about that product they used to sell on like
podcasts?
Yeah.
And stuff? Yeah.
I've never heard of this, so let's move on because I'm horrified.
I'm upset as well. they're selling these little metal shavings, which it's a MacGuffin. It makes no difference. But they're trying to sell it to James Marsden's company.
Are you saying none of the characters are invested in the Swarf?
Yeah, they are. No, they are invested. None of the audience is.
Oh, okay. All right.
And they find that Vince Vaughn's old boss, played by Sienna Miller, is back-channeling a deal, you know, by offering sexual favors, as all women businessmen are known to do.
Oh, of course.
As we've learned from the films.
Man, Sienna Miller sure can pick them. Those films.
She should fire her agent. And this is a comedy, but it's so lacking in the joke department, and so heavy on the schmaltz.
Like
and,
melodramatic.
Yes, yeah, this false sincerity. It's chock full of this false sincerity and these forced, unearned, sentimental.
What's the sentiment?
Segment.
Like, oh, Dave Franco, you can do it. You just got to try.
Well, no, not really.
Jeff, I want you to go into Dave Franco's character because when you revealed the true nature of Dave Franco's character, I got so angry I drove off the road into the Delaware River.
Let me get to him in 1 second.
Okay.
And let me just finish my thought on the forced sentimentality because that's a major part of this film. And it involves Vince Vaughn's family that he leaves back in St. Louis.
He's working too much, right?
Yeah, he's working way too much.
Yeah, get the fuck out of here with that.
Does his wife keep calling during the movie and he looks at his phone and then doesn't
always,
answer?
Always. She's always calling.
Are there a lot of like montages where like a sad song plays and he thinks about someone?
Sort of, yeah. Yeah.
Does he almost cheat on her?
No. Believe it or not, he doesn't.
See? It's a good movie after all.
He has no... there's no sexuality about his character whatsoever. It's all in the Dave Franco and Tom Wilkinson characters. Where all the sex is involved. But Vince Vaughn, his teenage son is overweight and he's being bullied at high school. And his younger, I guess, preteen daughter is bullying kids who are making fun of her older brother.
Is this all happening off screen?
Yeah, all that happens off screen and it's addressed after the fact.
Okay.
And it's terrible. It's just as terrible as it sounds on this podcast. and it's so boring. It's utterly boring. But... They just milk it throughout the whole thing, and it's supposed to be the big climactic thing when he returns. He solves all the problems, and it's just, who cares?
Yeah.
I'm not invested in any of these characters. Okay, now that that's out of the way, let's get to the real problem of this film.
Yes.
And it's Dave Franco's character, a character named Mike Pancake, which might be the best joke in the film is that his name is Pancake.
Right.
That's the best joke that the film can do.
Is it explained why, or is that really just
He's Greek?
Name?
He's just it's a Greek name.
Okay, then. Yeah. All right.
that's it. But and it,
the Pancake, do they do jokes like that?
Nope.
Oh.
No, they don't.
Well, I would have wrote those.
The joke is that he can't say his name in a business meeting because the people that they're trying to sell to become distracted by the fact that this grown man's name is Pancake.
Okay.
Well, almost grown man.
Right. He's a baby boy. Baby boy man. But that's the funniest thing in the entire film. The problem with Mike Pancake is that he's a dummy. He's a stupid, stupid character, which is great. You know, I love dumb characters. You know, the Joey Tribbiani character from Friends.
Right.
Bill Murray has played, you know, What About Bob? He's a crazy person. He's dumb. This character.
Benedict Cumberbatch was just Alan Turing.
That's different.
He's a big dummy.
That's different.
That's a different kind of dumb.
Yeah, it's the other side of that. He's a genius.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the polar opposite, if you will.
The problem with Michael Pancake, salesman, is that he is, it's revealed halfway through the film, mentally challenged. He's a mentally challenged adult lives in a home with other mentally challenged adults where, and this is in the film, they teach you to do stuff like iron.
Wait, so did they steal him from this special needs home?
He was applying for a job at the same place that Vaughn and Wilkinson were leaving. It was their last day at their job, the same building, and he didn't get the job. Probably because he's mentally challenged, and who let him out, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so they hired
him? It's just as sensitive as it sounds.
Did they hire him as, like, a pity move?
Well, they don't know he's mentally handicapped,
No, they don't
right?
know he's mentally...
They just think he's, like, a dummy, right?
They think he's a dumb go-getter. He's motivated because he's, you know, he's trying to apply for a job, and... Oh, boy. I hate this movie.
That's upsetting.
Does he move in with Vince Vaughn at the end?
No, they go on a trip for the whole movie, and he bunks with Tom Wilkinson's character, while Vince Vaughn stays in a museum as a piece of art. He's businessman number 42.
All right.
None of this is
Were
all.
You suggesting that Tom Wilkinson and Dave Franco have sex at some point?
They do. Not with one another.
Oh, okay.
Dave Franco has a couple escapades with German women because they're in Germany for most of the film.
Uh-huh.
And Tom Wilkinson, his sole motivations for closing this big deal with James Marsden's company is to divorce his wife and have sex with a woman in a maid's outfit, wheelbarrow style.
Man, I hate this movie.
It is a piece of garbage, and I gave it a 0 out of 10 in my review it deserves way less than that, but we don't have negative numbers in our review scheme.
It's our first 0 of 2015.
This movie's fucking horrible.
That just upsets me to no end.
It's insulting. It's insensitive. It hates women, too, because Vaughn's character, his wife, has no name. I can't find it anywhere online. It's not even on IMDb.
Nice. Nice work.
It's just the actress's name
insane.
And then a blank spot next to the name. Sienna Miller plays his old boss. Her name is – you ready for this one? You're not going to believe it. Her name's Chuck.
Hilarious.
You like that?
Hilarious.
It's good stuff. Real rich. And her entire thing is that she has sex with James Marsden to screw Vince Vaughn out of the deal.
Man.
And so she's an object to overcome. His wife, her harping on him is an object to overcome. Tom Wilkinson's wife, he wants to divorce. That's an object to overcome. This movie hates women, and it hates the mentally challenged, and I hate this movie.
Yeah, this is good. Just hearing about it upsets me to
fucking
no end.
Terrible. If this isn't in the top 5 of our worst films of 2015, I'd be shocked, because it means we had a really, really bad year.
Man, don't say now. I'm scared. I hope that doesn't happen.
The way things are looking.
I mean, yeah. So, well, I wish I could counter this with better film news.
How does Unfinished Business deal with robots?
Nice segue, Dave. Oh. Chris, why don't you tell us?
I was really doing a good job segueing until Dave took out his real segue and ran over my foot. So the film I saw was Chappie. Yes, Chappie, the film from Neil Blomkamp. How's it said? Does anyone know pronounced?
I don't know.
Blomkamp. Let's say Blomkamp.
Simply Blomkamp.
Blomkamp. You're at it again. So Neil Blomkamp, he directed District 9 and Elysium, and of course, he famously posted fan art that he didn't even draw and got hired to direct the next Alien film, because that's all it takes in Hollywood, I guess. Really subpar deviant art fan art gets you the Alien franchise. So District 9, when that came out, everyone was like, oh, wow, Neil Blomkamp, he's a new visionary for sci-fi films.
Yeah, this is really one-third of a good movie.
Yeah, District 9, that was a film. I saw that in theaters, and when I saw it initially, I was like, oh, that's entertaining. I liked that. I liked the way it was done. I liked the effects. I liked how ridiculously violent it was. Like, that sort of made it interesting. When it came out on DVD, I rented it or whatever. I watched it, and it did not hold up. I said, this is not good at all. Then Elysium came out, and everyone agreed that that was not a good film at all.
Now, I just watched the trailer for Elysium today.
Have you seen Elysium at all, the film?
No, I've never seen it. I was going to watch it, but I watched the trailer, and I said, nope. Nope, I'd rather Iron Ties. But I noticed that the robots in Elysium look identical to the robot design in Chappie.
That's his thing. He loves this like motion capture technology, and all his robots, they just basically look the same.
Okay. I think it takes place like in a similar world.
If it does, they don't mention that once in Chappie. So
I remember when he first came up with the idea, he mentioned that it took place in the same realm as Elysium.
Okay.
I believe it's called the Bullshit Realm.
I mean, the robots look identical to the Chappie robots.
Yeah, I mean, those things in Elysium
is
are Chappie.
Is Neil Blomkamp a robot? Is he Blompy? Is he?
He's campy.
I have questions.
He is campy.
He's campy. So yeah, after Elysium, everyone wondered, was District 9 a fluke? And the answer is yes, absolutely. Because
could things get any worse?
Yes, because Chappie is, as much as I didn't like Elysium, Elysium is a work of art compared to Chappie, which just is
Elysium has like a decent first act.
Elysium has a good story, I guess you could say. I like the idea. I like parts of Elysium.
That seems to be Blomkamp's thing. Neil, first act, Blomkamp.
Yeah. I like some of the, I like the big gun in Elysium, the chemtrail
gun.
Fucking
rail gun is amazing.
That was cool. But he has good ideas. He doesn't know how to execute them. So Chappie, it's set in the not-too-distant future. It's set in Johannesburg, as most of his films are, because I think he's from Johannesburg.
Yeah, see the same realm.
I think that's a cool – no. No, same city.
That's a real city? I'm joking.
Well, Dave.
I like that because
yeah.
hardly any films are set in South Africa.
Right. Although
hardly
there's, any. There's not a there, everyone in this movie is white, so it's he
well, so it's so it's very realistic.
Yeah. So
it's pre-apartheid.
No, it's not. So yeah, it's set in the not too distant future. Basically the police force has been not replaced, but basically they're subsidizing robot cops, if you will, RoboCops, if you will. They're called.
I won't go on.
They're called Scouts, and they have you know, they have artificial intelligence. They look sort of like Johnny Five from Short Circuit. And the guy who basically designed the robots, played by Dev Patel from Slumdog Millionaire, he develops not just artificial intelligence but actual intelligence. He develops a way to make robots think. And he wants to do this, and the head of the company, played by Sigourney Weaver, says no because you know this is a weapons company. We don't need robots that think. And
right. There's certainly no money to be made with that.
Yes, exactly. And so he says, I'm going to do it anyway, and he gives a robot that's supposed to be destroyed because it's in the junk heap, the artificial intelligence. But unfortunately, just as he's about to do this, a gang of hoodlums – played by South African rap rave group Die Antwoord, or however you pronounce it,
Die Antwoord.
They have to pull off one last job to pay off a warlord. And I'm already bored talking about this. Basically, it's a piece of shit movie filled with phony sentiment, and it's just dumb. There's no good ideas in this film.
Chappie robbed a bank.
It's not even a bank. They rob like an armored car, and it happens at the very end. It's
this is stupid.
Like the general idea of the film, taking this robot and teaching it to rob banks, that's a cool, quirky idea. That doesn't happen in this film. It's filled with this just false sentiment that like Chappie is this innocent, sweet robot, and I don't know. Like you can tell Neil Blomkamp, he's trying to make it so that Chappie is this sort of beloved character like E.T. or the Iron Giant. Like this film borrows heavily from the Iron Giant. Yeah, like just watch the Iron Giant because it's a better film. And it's none of that sentiment comes through. Chappie isn't endearing. He's an annoying, stupid robot. And
I feel like it's Jar Jar Binks. That's what I get.
That's what it's like.
Character.
It's that, and then it's the same thing with
You're saying Chappie gonna die?
It's the same thing with Die Antwoord in this film. Like you can tell. They're written to be these quirky, lovable criminals, but they're just assholes. And I don't – every time they show up on the screen with their bullshit fucking haircuts, I'm just like, stop. Get off. It just made me angry. And then Hugh Jackman is in the film as the bad guy.
Hey, how are the haircuts in this film?
They're terrible. Okay. He has a mullet. He wears cargo shorts the whole movie.
And Die Antwoord has some crazy haircuts too.
Yeah.
Right?
And
does Chappie have a haircut?
He might as well.
Chappie's a robot.
Does Chappie lower himself into liquid metal at the end?
No, he does.
Thumbs up.
Yeah.
No.
Oh.
None of that happens.
He's dark.
I'm Chappie.
No, that didn't happen.
Well, anyway,
I'd lower you into liquid metal. I wanted to say there's a fine line between making your character fun and lovable,
right,
and making it a precocious little shit,
right?
Because for every Wall-E and E.T.
Yeah.
and Chappie, the Iron Giant, you have your Maurice from Little Monsters,
right,
who is supposed to be fun and wild and off the wall and lovable, but he's just an asshole.
Yeah, you want him to calm down.
Yes, you want him to be tethered to the back of a truck.
He's literally pissing in a kid's lunch.
Yeah, but it's fun, right? It's funny. Everybody loves it.
And that's what this character is like. When he first comes to life, he's admittedly kind of cute because he's sort of like, oh, he's an adorable new robot. But then he starts talking in like ghetto-y slang terms.
How fast does that get old?
Oh, instantly.
Okay.
And you know, he starts cursing, but of course, even though he says everything else normal, when he curses, he does the curse words wrong, because that's, like, instead of saying motherfucker, he says fuck mother, because hilarious, right?
This
hilarious.
Is bullshit.
And, so Hugh Jackman is insane in this movie, where he, there's literally a scene where he pulls a gun out in an office and points it at Dev Patel's character and then says, I'm just joking, and he goes back to his desk, and no one does anything about this.
I think we have a human resources problem.
And
was Chartello Copley not available?
Chartello Copley is the voice of Chappie.
Oh, yeah, that's
so,
right.
And,
that would have got confusing if he played Hugh Jackman.
Yes. And Hugh Jackman's character, I don't even know how to explain his character. He's just insane. And There's one point, the best scene in the film is he's lurking around the corner with some binoculars, spying on Chaffee, and he pulls them down and he goes, "What in the name of the Lord?" And
that's right. There's a religious tint.
Yeah, so Hugh Jackman's character, he's really into religion.
Oh, so he doesn't like robots.
He doesn't like Chaffee because Chaffee is a creature without a soul. And just all this shit, it's just there. They don't do anything with it. It's just in the film. Like, who cares?
They suggest that the serpent in the garden was Chappie?
Yes.
Okay.
That actually happens in the film. That's the last scene of the film.
Oh.
And we all take our cyanide pills. So, yeah, Chappie, it sucks.
Yeah. This didn't look good from the first trailer I saw. I couldn't figure out what the tone of this film was supposed to be.
Yeah, and the film can't either.
I was going to say, it sounds like you can't figure it out either, and you saw the entire film.
Yeah, like, does it want to be an action movie? Does it want to be a fun family movie? It's rated R, so it's clearly, supposed to be for adults, but...
It opened in first place with $13 million.
Well, my God.
Nothing else is out right now.
$13 million put you in first place in March of 2015.
Which shows how bad Unfinished Business did.
But basically, after this, anyone who's legitimately still excited for Neil Blomkamp's Alien, whatever that's called, should really reconsider.
Be drawn in quarters.
He doesn't have anything else to offer at this point.
Did they kill Prometheus 2 when they announced Alien?
No, that's still happening.
Okay,
but
good.
I want that to be as convoluted as possible. Get this entire Aliens universe to just be all over the map.
It's clear that 20th Century Fox has no idea what to do with Aliens, so I guess we'll see. Who knows? Maybe Neil Blomkamp's Alien will be good, but probably not.
Yeah.
So you want to go to break? Come back?
Yeah, let's take a break and we'll
Chappie
talk
some more?
No, we'll talk about... We'll talk about an excellent film that is not Chappie.
Yes, Chappie 2. Chappie's on Parade.
Zero Dark Chappie, it's called. Ah, come forth and let me tell you the tale of CutPrintFilm.com, a film review, editorial, and news website.
Have they got any loot there?
They do. Oh, I can't find it. Does anyone know where the loot is?
I have one right here.
Cutprint Film has a merry band of men.
Do they drop the beat?
Yes, they do! It includes More Like Radio, Joystick Jerks, and Anti-Fanboy.
Hello? Is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes.
Oh, yeah.
Smile.
I'm Osama bin Laden.
Oh my.
All right, we're going to get sued
by Osama bin Laden. We all know the Richies and the bin Ladens have a long history.
Yes, and you can't prove they don't.
Hi, we're back. This is the Cutprint Film Podcast, director series number 8.
Is that what this is?
Yeah.
We're on number 8? Look at us. Wow. We've really made some progress.
Mm.
All right, so yeah, this is the final episode of our Catherine Bigelow director series.
And this is the first director in a director series I'm actually sad to see go. I would keep going if we could.
The Kubrick one, I could have done some more films,
yeah.
Even though I've seen 1 million Kubrick films.
Yeah, that's impossible, but okay.
Yes, there aren't 1 million of them. Don't look for them.
Yeah, we actually could have done another Kubrick, like Paths of Glory, Spartacus, like...
Well,
B-side.
We can always come back
on episode 908.
Yes. That's a terrifying.
If we're still doing this 900 episodes into the future, listen, I won't be here.
We might have Chappie as a co-host by then.
Yes. So, anyway,
yeah, but I agree. I am going to miss Catherine Bigelow. Yeah. I could do a few more of her films, no problem. I think she's a really great director.
Absolutely.
And before we go any further, let me play this little piece of production.
Please do.
It's the Cutprint Film Director Series. Action!
Directors!
Pass the popcorn. Put a piece in my mouth.
It's always funny to me.
I love that.
So yeah, the Director Series is a thing we do here on the Cutprint Film Podcast where one of us picks a director, we each pick a film, and then we spend 3 shows talking about the film in question.
Yes, and this Director Series, we were talking about Catherine Bigelow. We talked about... her 1991 film Point Break. first. And then last week we talked about 1995's Strange Days, yes, which was not a very good movie. And this week we are talking about her 2012 film Zero Dark Thirty.
Sorry, this is probably the most contemporary film we've done yet on, yes, on the director series.
And just to tip my hat, oh, watch out, I tipped it too far. Salt spell out of it.
Oh, throw it over your shoulder.
This is the probably one of the best director series films we've watched.
This is a masterpiece, and yeah, if you don't think so, you're wrong.
Yes, you should get bent and get lost. So yeah, this film stars Jessica Chastain, Jason Clarke, Kyle Chandler, and a host of other great, great B-level actors, I'll call them.
This
because
is
there are no stars aside from Chastain.
Character actors.
Yeah. Great character actors.
This is a great cast, and they all turn in great performances. Even people in small roles are just phenomenal.
Yeah, we get Mark Duplass in this.
Which I forgot, and I was like, oh, look at that.
James Gandolfini pops up out of nowhere, and he's excellent. It's just a really good cast. Yeah. And I'm going to read this plot synopsis. It's a little involved.
The film treks over 10 years. Yeah. So
I feel like, and this is such a good film, I want to give the plot the justice it's due in case we miss anything in our discussion. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to let it rip. If you want to interrupt me, don't even think about it. So in 2003, Maya, played by Jessica Chastain, a young U.S. CIA officer, has spent her entire career since graduating from high school focused solely on gathering intelligence related to Osama bin Laden. She is assigned to the U.S. Embassy in Pakistan to work with fellow officer Dan, played by Jason Clarke, who's fantastic. What a great performance!
I love him in this.
During the first few months of her assignment, she witnesses Dan torturing some terrorist suspects.
Bro,
what's that?
He says bro a lot.
Yeah, he loves tipping back some brewskis and playing some horseshoes.
He's a big Dave Matthews fan.
And eventually they find that the target they're looking for is a man named Abu Ahmed.
Yes.
And
I thought it was Osama bin Laden.
No. That's the main target.
That's everyone's target, Dave.
I'm confused.
Abu Ahmed, they think, is is bin Laden's personal courier.
Yes.
He
brings him the Courier Post.
Yes, exactly. That's a local newspaper for everyone who isn't from our area. Now we're all in on the joke. Other detainees corroborate this, and so Jessica Chastain's character Maya feels that this is a solid lead.
Right.
She continues to go through mass data and info using a variety of technology, and she concentrates on finding Abu Ahmed, determined to use him to find bin Laden, because the ultimate goal is to find bin Laden. Right. During a span of 5 years, she survives the 2008 Islamabad Marriott Hotel bombing, which is an incredible scene.
Oh, so good.
Incredible scene. Shocking, too.
And that they confirm that actually happened.
What, the bombing?
Yeah, no, that they were there, the two agents.
Oh, did they confirm that?
I know, I'm asking.
No. I don't think so. I don't think anything is 100% confirmed. Okay. Or, you know.
Because they make it seem like they're a target.
No, I think it's just a way of putting them in the action to keep it, you know.
To keep it grounded.
They say everybody is a target.
Right.
Anybody that's involved with the CIA, like once they know your face or know your name.
So like you or me, we're targets?
No, not
you guys in the CIA.
Dave, we're podcast. We're part of the CPF. That's Cut Print Film. I already read that. A Jordanian detainee claims that the man previously identified from a photograph as Abu Ahmed is a man he personally buried back in 2001.
Right.
And this causes everyone else other than Maya to give up on the hunt. A fellow analyst researching Moroccan intelligence archives comes to Maya and suggests that Abu Ahmed is a man named Ibrahim Saeed, and that he's still alive. Maya agrees with this man and contacts Dan, who is now working at the CIA headquarters. She has found that Ibrahim Saeed had a brother, Habib, and theorizes that CIA's supposed photograph of Abu Ahmed was of Habib, and he is said to bear a striking resemblance to Ibrahim and was killed.
Right.
Just like that detainee said.
I think they say he actually had like 8 brothers and they all look alike.
Yeah, yeah. So what they do is they tap his mother's phone. And one of the callers' persistent use of tradecraft, which is a word they throw around in this.
Yes.
Yeah, it means just acting like a spy.
Yeah. One of the callers to this number that they tapped, consistent use of trade craft to avoid detection leads Maya to conclude the caller is Abu Ahmed. At Maya's behest and with the support of her supervisors, numerous CIA operatives are deployed to search for and identify Abu Ahmed. And this is another great scene where they locate his vehicle via GPS.
There's so many.
God,
this film is so good. It's broken up by these great little set pieces. Not even set pieces, just like quote unquote action scenes.
I'd call them set pieces because it's like a centralized location for the entire thing.
It's almost like they break up each act of the film with these awesome moments.
Yeah. Where was I?
So the GPS, they track him down.
Right. They find this guy, and then
it's kind of like the hunt for the aliens and aliens like that.
Sort of,
yeah.
Which is a James Cameron film.
It absolutely is. So, and they follow this SUV that the man was driving back to this compound. Shortly after that, Maya is gunned down, while her vehicle's gunned
down. She's shot at her house.
Yeah, and that's another great scene.
Yes.
The CIA puts the compound that this man was driving to under heavy surveillance for months.
Right.
Using a variety of methods. Although they are confident from the evidence that bin Laden is there, they can't prove with any photographs or satellite images that he is there.
Yes.
All they have is heat signatures, and they know that there's more than one person living there.
And they're not even...
Well, it is the desert.
And yeah, it's just a red screen.
It's pretty hot there. And it's not even that they're all... the only person through the whole film who's convinced about bin Laden is Maya. Even at the end, right before the big attack
showdown,
everyone says like, "Oh, we're 60% certain." So even her superiors have their doubts.
Yeah, but she tells her superiors that she is 100% certain that bin Laden is there, and so they make the call and SEAL Team 6, the famous SEAL Team 6.
They get her done, I believe.
They do get her done.
And they're played by such people as Chris Pratt.
Yes, Chris Pratt showing off his abdominals for the very first time since Parks and Rec.
He's Chris Kyle in this?
Yeah,
no,
exactly.
Different Chris. I don't even think his character's name is Chris.
No, it's not. His name is Justin.
Okay. But don't worry, Dave. The real actor's name is Chris.
Okay. So thanks.
You're half right.
I was good. That was close.
So yeah, the raid is approved and executed on May 2nd, 2011. And although the operation is complicated by one of the helicopters crashing because Mr. Magoo is piloting it, the SEALs gain entry and kill a number of people in a nightmarish scene.
Oh, it's
just a nightmare.
This is one of the most tense, well-done sequences in any film ever. And it's almost done in the exact real time that the real night raid was done.
And since this has come out, it's been mimicked many times in other movies.
Yes.
Yeah. And they find bin Laden on the top floor. They take him out and they pack his body up and bring it back to... Well, I don't know if they ever made the mainland, but...
No, they take it back to, like, the base.
Yeah,
Afghanistan.
And we see Maya hop on a plane, and, you know, the pilot tells her, you're the only passenger. Where you want to go.
Yeah, he says, where you want to go.
Which is a great line.
And she breaks down and the film ends, which is a haunting fucking ending.
Yeah, because this was her life.
Right.
So where do you want to go? I have no idea.
And it's not just her. It's just us as a society and nation. Mm-hmm. Where do you want to go from here?
All right, let's bring it back.
Yeah,
let's talk about
all
this movie.
Back. So,
So are we all in agreement that Zero Dark Thirty is a excellent goddamn movie?
Yeah.
It's a great movie. It's Catherine Bigelow's best movie.
Without question.
It is so mature.
I love one of the reasons I love this director series so much is I loved watching her evolve as a filmmaker.
Because if you look at Point Break, the beginning of Point Break and the beginning of this are so similar. They revolve around out of high school or college new recruits to agencies, but they're so different in tone and style.
But you see echoes of what
too.
Was, and in Point Break you see hints of what will come, and it's like it is a mature film, but this is such an expertly made movie from everybody, not just the direction. The screenplay is a thing of beauty. The pacing of this movie is. I don't know that I've seen better pacing in the last 10 years.
I don't think there's any movie like this movie because this doesn't have like a central story. Like, there's no plot. There's no like character.
It just
happens.
It's like vignettes broken up over years.
It's like a patchwork of events.
Yeah.
And
but it doesn't feel like a patchwork.
No.
It feels fluid. This is 10 years worth of time told little under 3 hours.
Yeah.
And it just – it feels like it's an hour long.
But there's no
– this feels like an hour long movie. That's how intense it is.
It's like a Swiss clock of a film. Yeah. Every single part functions perfectly and it's just –
and there's no bullshit.
No.
None.
Not at all.
Yeah, there's not a single scene in this film that I think could be like – excise.
And at the same time, it feels like there's nothing missing.
Right.
I would say this is a 9 out of 10. I don't know if I want to say it's a 10 out of 10, but this is an incredible, incredible movie.
Yeah, I mean, this would be in that 9.5 class. Yep. Like movies that are almost perfect and might be, you know.
Yeah, I think I need a little time for this. I might come back and say this is perfect in 10 years.
Yeah, because, I mean, when I saw this in 2012, I knew it was great, but watching it again for the show, I was blown away at just how phenomenal this movie is and how well put together it is. And just, it's, I don't know, I love movies that are challenging. That's the word I want to use. Because this movie, it doesn't hold your hand a single second. It doesn't judge anything. And one of the reasons this film met with a lot of controversy is that it tackles really heavy controversial subjects and it doesn't have any opinion about them.
No, this is such a matter-of-fact film. Everything is delivered matter-of-fact. There's no politics to it, really.
And that upsets people because people like to be...
Tell me what I need to think.
Yeah, they want that paint-by-numbers, like, oh, what should I be feeling here? And this film met with a huge amount of controversy for the first hour, half hour is all about torture and torture scenarios. And because the torture in the film happens in this blunt, matter-of-the-fact way, and because there's never a scene where someone's saying, this torture is wrong, people thought, oh, this movie condones torture. It, and it doesn't at all. It's presenting torture that happened. And you know what? It did. It was
something that happened and it was used as a tool and these people used it as part of their job.
It would be like making a World War II movie and not acknowledging the Holocaust. Because that's upsetting. Like, well, it happened. Yeah. You know,
it's like making a movie about my job in life and not using Microsoft Excel.
that's equivalent to the Holocaust metaphor I just used.
But even if you go to the end of the film where there's the gigantic
political shift.
No.
Oh. I thought I knew where you were going.
Nope. The gigantic raid on the bin Laden compound.
Abbottabad.
Everything is still matter of fact. Right. It's not shot like an action movie.
No.
There's no rah, 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 let's get him. It's horrifying.
It's detached, but also emotion. It's a weird... I haven't seen any scene done like this where it's
the
such
violence of it affects you.
Yeah, it's such a cold sort of detached way, but it's still somehow emotional.
It's weird because by not doing those typical action movie things those used to build tension, the music and the cutting cameras, that action movie bullshit. But now we're so acclimated to that this weird cold detached thing is actually way more tense.
And what I love about we're already at the end already and we'll jump back, but what I love about this ending sequence is how even in that detached way she keeps it human. There's these human moments. Like there's a scene literally right after they kill bin Laden where one of the SEAL Team 6 is asking the daughter who he is and he gives her that little glow stick to distract her. And also I love when they finally carry bin Laden's body out, the camera just focuses on this just pool of blood where his body once was. And it just, I don't want to say it humanizes bin Laden, but it humanizes the scenario where it's like, oh, this just ugly pile of blood that's just on the floor. There's nothing glamorous about it is what I'm saying, I guess.
No, there's nothing glamorous about any of this. Right. This is not Hollywoodize this story at all.
A lot of people have criticized this film as being propaganda. And again, I don't see that because this isn't. No one comes off in a good light in this movie.
That feeling of Osama being dead at the end, it demystifies the legend. You know what I mean? Because he's
even the way he's killed is this really
It's over. It's so quick.
Yeah, it's not dramatic at all. You don't even see it happen. It's just very oh, well, he's dead. And it's just
And the music that is used in this movie.
The music's great.
Oh, it's so good. But it's so reserved. It's the score is done by Alexander Desplat,
right?
And it's a lot of symphony, It's a lot of strings, but it's so quiet and so reserved, and there's no,
you almost don't notice it.
No, and that's the great thing about it. And this film also does a lot of great work with silence. A lot of scenes where there's nothing being said says so much more than, you know, a film where you typically have some catchphrases coming at you.
Like American Sniper, where it's just like,
hey, legend.
You're a legend. Oh, stop it.
I'm a legend. No, you're a legend. All right.
So
the cool thing about this versus American Sniper is this was also a movie where the subject hadn't died when they started production of the film.
Right. This film was originally supposed to be about the Battle of Tora Bora and it was about the hunt for Bin Laden and how America
and the futility
had,
of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and while they were about to go in production of the film, Bin Laden actually got killed, so they had to like, oh shit, we have to fix our movie.
And it's tough to like, because that it seems, without knowing that, like that he wasn't dead when they started making the movie, it makes it seem so genius because the whole movie has this futile, air of futility.
This isn't a happy, like, even when they finally get Bin Laden, it's not like this, you know, hooray, we did it moment. It's like, well, you know, we've really accomplished, what have we accomplished?
There's
here?
Very few hooray, we did it moments in the film. There's one which ends tragically.
Right.
If you want to talk about that, because that scene is
what, the fort scene.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk about that. Now let's jump back because I feel like we're already like in the middle of the film. So yeah, this sequence is even knowing what happens in this sequence is it's incredibly tense and well done.
It was weird seeing it the second time because the first time like you miss a lot of things like how unprofessional her character's acting because she's like
and we're talking
up
about Jennifer Ely's character.
She's
Jessica.
Great in this too.
Yes.
Yeah. Everybody's great in this. We could just run down the goddamn list. Let's do it right now. Let's
okay.
So
no. Yeah. So she brokers this deal. I forget who the
It's a doctor.
Okay.
And he
he's like in the inner circle apparently.
Because like for a while there was this rumor going around that Bin Laden had
he needed dialysis.
Yeah, he had like leukemia or something like that. Yeah. And so they were hoping that this doctor would eventually get into Bin Laden's inner circle and they would go and have him kill Bin Laden basically. Right. So this guy, he comes to them and he says, you know, I want to help you. And so they set up this big meet. First he wants what's her name? Jennifer Ely's character Jesse. He wants her to come to the, you know, the
Al-Qaeda territory.
Yeah,
won't happen.
That's not going to happen. So they set up this meet at this fort in Afghanistan and he's late. It's like right after Christmas, and she's really excited because it's their first big break in a while.
And she says it's the biggest break since 9/11.
Pretty much. Yeah. And they're just waiting, and it's waiting. And the tension just builds. Just the way Catherine Bigelow films this. Because even if you don't know what's going to happen, you just know from the way the shots are composited that just something is amiss here.
You get these sweeping landscape shots and you know, at first there's a sense of excitement, and then there's a sense of, he's not going to show up.
Right.
But then you see this junker car
in the distance,
spitting up sand
and
behind it.
There's this gorgeous shot where the character Jessica, she just walks out, and she's just framed, and it's just like the landscape. You see her, and then in the distance, you see the car coming.
Yeah.
And that shot just like gives me chills the way it's just framed.
Especially knowing what's coming.
Right.
I mean, it's beautiful not knowing, but once you know that that's her doom on its way.
And when he gets out of the car and starts like he says Allah Akbar once, and like it cuts to her standing on the other side of the car, and the other girl who's with she starts running away.
Right.
She knows
once you hear that in that city. Get out.
Yeah, and you just see like this look of like defeat come over her face.
Yeah.
She just stands there and then the car explodes.
It's just a dreadful scene. And
it's
I mean that in the literal sense. It's just just filled with dread.
And while this is happening, she's had a text conversation going back and forth with Maya and she stops responding, and you know, then somebody comes into the CIA office looking very upset with the news of what just happened. And it's an incredible, incredible scene.
Yeah.
And it's just – it's tragic. And, you know, that is confirmed that happened.
Yeah, that happened.
Character,
yeah.
It's like the deadliest attack against CIA agents in the history of the agency.
Yeah.
All right. So We got that out of our system.
Yes.
I just wanted to make sure we talked about that scene because everything about it was, you know, it was a masterful scene.
And it complements the previous big attack scene at the Marriott, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the same character at that hotel with Maya.
Yeah.
I love that sequence because that's also done in this matter of fact. What I love most about that scene is after the big explosion, they don't like
anyone.
Yeah, I feel like a lesser, more Hollywood movie would have them like, oh, we have to make them look heroic, where they're like they just get the fuck out of there,
much like I would have, a rat,
right?
Yeah, and because they know after an explosion, there could be some kind of secondary thing where guys run in with gut, like they're trained to just.
I would have been like
Tomas.
But I think like that's a perfect example of how like no one in this film is heroic. There's no like. Even, you know, the SEAL Team 6 at the end, they do a heroic thing, but they're not presented in, like, this, look at these heroes sort of way. And I just love that. But,
the heroes defined by what they actually do.
Right.
Jessica Chastain's character is a hero in, like, the greater sense of the word. But
what I love, let's talk about her character, because her character is the big thing for the film, obviously. And what I love most about this character is even though she's right, she's also a lunatic, really.
Right.
She's as much a zealot as any terrorist, really. She's like a megalomaniac.
Yeah, she's damaged goods.
Right.
She is obsessed with this one thing, which is finding and killing Bin Laden.
Right.
And she'll stop at nothing. She'll alienate everyone around her,
right,
professionally and personally. And she's so focused on finding Bin Laden. But I don't know. I love this character.
Oh, it's great. I love her performance. Jessica Chastain is a great actress to begin with, but this is such a fucking strong performance.
She's this waifish woman,
right,
but she's just so intense and so huge in personality.
And it's even though it's huge, it's a quiet performance. I mean, she has a few moments where she like blows up, but
right,
most of
that's what I mean. That's her, you know, her inner turmoil coming out,
right,
which I thought was great.
But yeah, so much of her performance is just like these like looks she's getting.
Yes, it's all facial acting.
You can always see like something just like turning behind her eyes, and it's so.
And I buy it every time. It's never there's no phoniness to this performance at all. I buy it.
Like, and she the fact that she lost Best Actress to Jennifer Lawrence for this infuriates me to no end.
And we're all fans of Jennifer Lawrence,
right? But that performance she won for Silver Linings Playbook, and that's such a showy look at how big I can be performance and. Compared to this, which is a subtle.
This is a best actress performance.
Right.
Yes.
Like,
yes,
it doesn't get any more best actress than this.
This is a Meryl Streep type performance.
Yeah.
And this is one of the coolest female roles ever seen.
I can't believe what this movie does. It gives you this female protagonist who not for a second gets wrapped up in any type of romance.
No.
Nope.
And there's no backstory on this character.
There's no backstory on any character, which is amazing.
I love that. Yeah, her character. You don't know anything about her.
You get nothing about this character's personal life, or even anything about her in general.
The only thing we do get is that she's recruited at a high school, which says a lot because it's like you have to take like personality tests to get into the CIA.
But that one bit of information makes her so interesting.
Right,
you're just imagining who this person was in high school that they could be recruited into the CIA.
Right.
Also being a female, it's like it just makes it.
And I know everybody cites Ellen Ripley as the
from Alien,
from Alien as the greatest female action protagonist.
No,
I think this Maya character is the best female protagonist I've ever seen.
I won't even argue with that because it's true. Like
because you don't.
This is one of the not just actresses. Actors across the gender spectrum, all two of them.
And
this is one of the best badass performances I've ever seen.
It's great. I love the way the character literally unfolds before our eyes. Like we see her grow as a character.
Mm-hmm.
At the start of the film, she comes in, she's watching torture, and she's sort of put off by it, but not entirely.
Not really.
And then by the end of the film, you can see how just fucking cold and beaten down. You can feel the weight of those 10 years on that performance. And that's so remarkable because you forget this film wasn't filmed over 10 years.
Right.
That's how well done this performance is. Like you can feel.
There was the great scene where she tells the Pakistani waiter that he should go back to school. That was a good one.
Yeah, she says, you should go to community college.
Has Chastain won an Oscar yet?
Not yet, no. Not yet. Which is a travesty because
it'll happen.
Yeah, at this point, it's going to have to happen. But so yeah, at the start of the film, she comes in. She's sort of new at this, but she's, you know, I love there's a scene where Jason Clarke's character, he's talking with his superior, played by Kyle Chandler,
who's also excellent.
He's great, and Jason Clarke says, like, you know, what do you think of her? And Kyle Chandler kind of says, Washington says she's a killer. And I fucking love that line.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes her even more like there's just this mystique about her that you don't know. You don't know anything about her, but you don't. There's like no need for more information.
Yeah, you don't like you need. You know everything you need to know for this story.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah.
Jason Clarke's character is great. He feels like a typical Catherine Bigelow character thrown into this universe.
Yeah.
That's what I like about him. Like, I could see that character in Point Break.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He like brings that essence to this film.
Yeah. That's true.
Like the scenes where he's like feeding the monkey.
I love those little character things like that. And then like they kill the monkeys. Killed my monkeys.
Again, it's a matter of fact. Yeah. Thing he just they killed my monkeys and he's upset about it
you know what I mean, like that's his breaking point.
I love that he just he's like I gotta get out of here, and I love that he just goes to see he's wearing like a suit all of a sudden.
Yeah, all the performances in this are fantastic. Yeah. James Gandolfini sticks out for me, and I don't know if it's because he died recently or if
it's one of his last performances, like his last major performances.
The Drop was his last major.
I said one of
okay
he brings like this instant like
gravitas.
Yeah. Just like the minute he walks into the room. And I love that. I always love seeing James Gandolfini in other things because I love seeing how much he isn't Tony Soprano. Yeah. Cause like, I feel like he played Tony Soprano for so long. He built up this thing in people's minds that everyone just thought like, oh, that's how he really is.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even have that, you know, that Jersey accent. That's not what he talks
about.
There's a
really good movie starring James Gandolfini called The Last Castle, where he plays this lunatic, warden for military prisoners, and he is excellent in that, and there's no Jersey accent or any of that nonsense. But yeah, getting off the James Gandolfini boat because it's sinking.
Yeah, but yeah, he plays Leon Panetta or something, the real head of the CIA at the time, and it's just there's a great sort of scene where he sits down with Jessica Chastain in the lower cafeteria for CIA agents, and I just love him where he says like, why do you think we hired you? And she says, like, oh, I don't think I can tell you that, even though he's the fucking director of the CIA. And I just, and like, I love that that's what inspires him to finally go ahead with the mission, that scene, just talking to her. Because they don't even talk about the mission, they're just talking.
Yeah. But it's just, that's the type of character that this Maya is, that she can convince the CIA, the head of the CIA, to go through with this major, major military operation, probably one of the biggest in history. Yeah. Just by having a cafeteria sit down with him.
Yeah, he says, how long have you worked for us? She says, 12 years. And he says, what else have you done besides this? And she says, nothing. Right? It's so cool.
But again, you buy this from this character, and Chastain sells it so well. This is such a, like I said, she's a badass. Right. Much more than, you know, like the Arnold Schwarzeneggers playing people like named Adam Gibson in The Sixth Day. It's just I don't buy any of that, and yet that's supposed to be the cornerstone that for action heroes. But
this like goes back to the structure a bit, but like right after that when they go through with the plan, like none of that feels tacked on.
No,
you know what I mean? Like if it's so crucial, the movie's two and a half hours.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like it.
No, it's the fastest 2.5 hours I've ever sat through a movie. Whereas the Strange Days was the longest 2.5 hours I've ever watched a film.
Yeah, I mean there are long movies that I like, and I'll just be like, this is a little too long. But this movie, everything fits perfectly. One thing leads to another.
It's the pacing. It's masterful pacing, and that's due in part to the screenplay, which is like I said, it's a piece of art. But also Bigelow's direction.
Right.
Every shot makes sense. Every scene makes sense. Every performance makes sense. All these performances really, really help seal the deal here.
Some of the scenes are so masterfully constructed. Like if you watch them and realize how many separate camera angles form like a 20-second block in the movie, you're like, holy shit.
Oh, absolutely.
This is so just directed in general. Like, no corners were cut. She shot this from 20 different angles and then cut them all together, and it just makes it feel perfect. That scene where the explosion at the fort,
right.
Like, there's scenes shot through binoculars, and then it cuts back, and then it's coming from the car, and you're just thinking, like, logistically, this had to take forever to film.
Yeah.
But that's, like, the work of a genius director.
So I feel like we have to spend like a chunk just talking about the ending raid. Just
yeah,
like,
I wanted to talk about that next anyway.
Right. So let's talk about that, because that's
bang bang shoot shoot.
Yeah, that's it. Then
that'll do it.
I feel like that was the one thing that was, I want to say, the selling point for the film, but I think that was the one thing everyone was talking about before they even saw this movie, that it would feature this big historic you know thing happening.
And though, like, just the creepiness of those helicopters, how they're silent.
Yes.
They're just like...
Silent.
And they disappear. Like, Bigelow films the helicopters. They're the... what are they? They're not Black Hawks, are they?
No, they're some kind of new helicopter. Okay. I can't remember what they're called.
She films them raising from the ground and then just disappearing into the sky. And it's so gorgeous. It's
great.
It's so haunting.
And I love the whole setup before that, where she meets the SEAL team at like the hangar. And I just love how she's just like, I didn't want to use any of you guys. I wanted to drop a bomb. Yeah. And like,
I love the way that the one guy, he like whispers to the guy to get him to come out. That's
they
one of
that,
the
they do that through the whole. I believe that's Chris Pratt's character, where he keeps whispering the names of the people in the house. To, I guess trying to like trick them into thinking it's someone they know. And
it's
unsettling.
Yeah, it does something to me that
they're literally going through like ghosts.
Yeah, that's murdering people.
Yeah, it's insane. And it's terrifying. This is one of the scariest scenes from a film I've seen in a long time, and it's not even a horror movie.
And what I think is so great about that is like you're supposed to. In any other movie, you'd be like, look at these heroes going through it. And like, but no, she films this like a horror movie.
Yeah.
And I love that.
This is like Brian De Palma
filming
like, Blowout.
It's like it's like following Michael Myers around as he stalks his sister in a house.
Yeah, except through night vision goggles.
Right.
And it's just horrifying. The shocking violence of the gunfire.
I love that.
It jars me every single time they pull the trigger.
How quiet it is. Like, yeah. Because the people in the house, they're shooting unsilenced guns.
Right.
And then the SEAL team, they have these super SEAL silencers.
It's like a shot in space is what it sounds like, a gun being fired in space.
And they do this, and this is protocol, but even after they kill someone, they shoot them again just to make sure they're dead.
Absolutely traumatizing.
It's that detached, upsetting way.
It is so weird how traumatizing it is, because like this was everyone's wet dream after 9/11.
Yeah,
like, you sat around and this is the moment, and it's realized, and in that you realize how horrible all of this is.
Yeah.
Like, we shouldn't be doing this as human beings.
Yeah, but it displays the awfulness of it just by showing it for what it is.
Right.
Just this matter of fact. This is how it happened. This is what they do.
Right.
These are targets. They're not people. And
yeah,
that's how this operation and all operations are carried out. This is a great movie.
Yeah. So they get to the compound. They go in. They blow the doors. And just, I almost want to go through it step by step, but that seems pointless just because you have to see it. But I just,
it's a good half hour. This whole thing is a half hour.
Yeah, this whole sequence takes, and it's also the first time in the film where we're not with Maya, really. She's in pretty much every scene. There's like one sequence where Jason Clarke's character goes to buy a Lamborghini for like a sheik to get information. But other than that, she's in every frame of this film.
There's some scenes with, what's his name from Game of Thrones, who plays Stannis, and that other guy.
Right.
Like,
the CIA guy.
They're going back and forth for a little while because he's trying to get the operation greenlit.
Right. Stephen Delane is the actor's name.
Yeah. That's another great thing. He's shown as a practicing Muslim.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot about
that. It's great. It just gives these subtle layers of humanity to these otherwise, they're just names on a piece of paper, these CIA operatives.
Right.
There's something amazing about the fact that we don't know what happened. Like this is something we don't know if it happened this way.
Right. Like, this is about as
close. It's fictional.
Right. Yeah, that's not. A lot of people criticize this film for not being entirely accurate. Can we please fucking stop that?
This is a movie, folks.
Jesus Christ, it's the same bullshit that people had with Selma. Just stop. Movies have no obligation to be 100% accurate. You're thinking of documentaries, and even those have no obligation
to
be 100%.
In case you were confused, Babe Ruth did not look like John Goodman.
But like you were saying, all like ghosts, like all the people in this movie are ghosts. Like we don't know, other than like the high level CIA guys, we don't know who any of these people
are. Oh yeah, these are all pseudonyms.
Her name's not Maya, and like she's still probably working for the CIA, getting people killed. And that like is awesome and freaks me out at the same time.
Yeah.
And I wish there were more movies like this. Like if you could make a fucking James Bond movie like this, it would be incredible. Like,
you haven't seen Moonraker.
Oh, my favorite.
the very accurate Moonraker.
Like, I almost wish this was a fake movie and she was like some spy character so we could just see more Zero Dark 40.
So you could have like more, you could have more fun with it.
Yeah.
Because like it does
Ocean's Dark 30.
Because as heavy as it is, you were saying, it is still a movie, and there is an entertainment fun value
to it. I mean, you know, your mileage may vary, but I find this film very entertaining. I mean, you know, not in a goofy, like, way, but, you know, it's an entertaining movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, then why were you wearing your American flag boxers only then while watching?
I always do that.
And why were you on Dave's porch looking through the windows while he was watching?
I always do that.
All right, so you said Kathryn Bigelow is now one of your favorite directors.
After this director series, I've realized that Kathryn Bigelow has now entered into my people I consider great directors.
Yeah, she's a great director. I'm so excited for everything that she does now.
Right.
Just because we've watched the evolution of this director.
And it's made me just want to go back and rewatch like the rest of her filmography, even the things I've already...
Even the bad ones.
Right.
Just to see, because there has to be good stuff in there.
She's such a goddamn good director, and like I almost want to say she's underrated, but she's not. But it just seems like people don't talk about her in that level. They talk about other great directors, and they absolutely should.
I'm not a James Cameron fan. I think she's three times the director James Cameron
is easily.
I enjoy Aliens.
Right.
That's James Cameron's best movie, in my opinion.
I mean, I like James Cameron, but again, she blows him out of the water.
But he gets praised left and right, up and down. He does not do it for me. Whereas Kathryn Bigelow, I don't know if it's just the fact that I've watched her. You know, this is a person that learns from what worked and what didn't work, and will scrap what didn't work and will build on what worked. And to have that type of self-awareness and ability to better yourself, that is fantastic, and that's a rarity, really.
Yeah, this was great getting to see a small body of work over such a large period of time because we were able to see the growth without watching everything.
Yeah.
It's a unique vantage with this director. So maybe we should start doing directors who've made less films.
Oh, good. Up next, Neil Blomkamp's director series.
And I just want to talk real quick about just like that last scene of the film. And I don't even know what else we can say about it. I just feel like we need to address it one more time.
It's poetic.
Right.
It's really...
Oh, you
really
mean her on the helicopter?
Yes.
Yeah. Or the plane?
The carrier. And that's the first real moment in the film where you get to see Jessica Chastain's character show any sort of vulnerability.
Yeah.
And you just feel like... When I watched it over the weekend for the show, I felt that emotion she was feeling, that just exhaustiveness.
Mm-hmm.
And just like we said, like when the pilot asks her, where do you want to go? It's just such a perfect way to end that film because, again, it's not just asking her. It's literally asking everyone.
Yeah.
Like where
where are we going from here?
And
are we going to keep doing this bullshit?
And in the end, what has this like really accomplished? Anything? Like, are we any, you know, what has changed?
Was all that torture worth it?
Right. Exactly.
You know, like,
and again, people pissed and moaned about the film's content, and they shouldn't have because apparently they didn't watch this last scene that perfectly sums up that the film is saying, was this all worth it? And it's not answering that question.
Yeah, it's
asking everyone, and you know, but people don't like that. They want to be spoon-fed, and
That's why Michael Moore makes documentaries.
Yes.
Tell me how to think.
I'm curious how the film would have ended if Bin Laden hadn't been killed.
I almost wish the film had been made before he had been killed, just to see that ending, because that would have been probably devastating and just bleak to watch.
I wonder if that script is out there anywhere.
I'm sure it's out there somewhere.
And that's the thing. Even without this operation where SEAL Team 6 kills Bin Laden, even without that entire segment of the film, this would have been an amazing movie. Yeah.
That almost feels like it's like a bonus scene.
Yeah,
like,
not tacked on.
Right, no.
Bonus.
Yeah.
Like it actually aids the film.
It's like a Marvel post-credit stinger.
No, it's nothing like that. It's absolutely nothing like that.
Well, we found the gauntlet of infinity.
maybe I'm confused because one of the SEAL Team 6 was played by Howard the Duck, I believe.
Oh yeah.
Did we watch the same cut?
Well, I did a lot of cough syrup before I watched it.
Okay.
Did they find the Infinity Gem?
We'll have to find out in Zero Dark 40, the film you mentioned.
That's Zero Dark 30.
That's it.
A great, great film, just shy of being a masterpiece.
And yeah, I'm curious of our listeners what they think of the film. So tweet at us. Tell us what you think of Zero Dark 30, because I really am curious to see if other people love this movie as much as we clearly did. Because, it's not a film I feel people talk about that much anymore. When it came out, there was a ton of buzz about it, but it feels like no one...
Which is shocking that nobody talks about it.
Right.
I don't know if it's because of the topic. It was so topical at the time, and now not so much, but...
If you
like, saw it, because this is how I am. I saw it before, and I liked it, but didn't recognize the greatness in it until rewatching
it. I didn't either. I had the exact same revelation when I watched it for the director series. Wow, there's so much technique and craft going on in this film. It's wonderful.
So before you tweet us, watch it again. Yeah. Then tweet us.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely. See the film before you mention it, what you think of it. Before us.
Don't make a boob of yourself
like John McCain did.
Yes. Yeah, John McCain did not like this film because clearly he didn't actually watch it.
Yes, he made a gaffe. All right, so that's Zero Dark 30, and that's the Catherine Bigelow director series.
And what's our next director?
Known director.
We got an email.
Right, this is our first fan-suggested director.
Email alert.
No, we didn't make any production for this. So we got an email from this guy named Will.
Yeah.
And Will writes...
Will Smith.
No, it's not Will Smith.
Oh, damn. It's not Big Willie style.
This guy writes, hey, guys, I love the podcast. Easily in my top three favorites. I'd love to know who the other two were so we could take them out with scissors.
We'll hire SEAL Team 6 to get them.
great work, guys. I'd love to hear a director series on David Lynch that includes Mulholland Drive.
Yes.
Like Chris says... Just saying. Just saying.
That's right.
Ha ha. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Will.
So, Will, our next director series will indeed be David Lynch.
Hopefully, Will, you're still listening to the show. Hopefully, we didn't do something that made you say, oh, they suck now.
Hopefully, nothing tragic has befallen you.
Yes, that too.
Or hopefully, you weren't off your meds when you wrote that email.
you accidentally wrote to us instead of one of the other two favorites.
Well, that email was addressed to us from Sing Sing Prison, I believe. So,
so for you, this one's for you, Will.
Right. So, we're going to be talking about David Lynch's films. First up will be The Elephant Man.
Yes, 1980s The Elephant Man.
Right, so you out there, everyone out there in podcast land, if you haven't seen The Elephant Man, watch it, and then you can listen to the show.
Yes, and if you want to write in and request a director like Will did, go ahead, and we will nervously read your email on our podcast as we try and not smile ourselves into a coma over the excitement of people actually writing in.
Right, and make it... The weirder, the better. The more insane your email, the more chance you have of us reading it on air.
That's right. If you address us Nanu Nanu, you can be sure it will be read immediately.
Right. So, yeah, if you have a director you want us to cover, send us an email. Tweet us at CutPrintFilm.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. Email us info@CutPrintFilm.com. Yeah. That's where you can get all the info for CutPrintFilm, apparently.
Or Dave@CutPrintFilm.
Don't do that.
Don't do that because Dave doesn't know how to use his email.
Dave is... using the same technology my pup uses, which is none at all. He doesn't know how to check email.
He has the Fisher-Price speak and spell, I believe.
So, shall we recommend some movies?
Let's dance, boys.
I can feel Cut Print Film Weekly picks coming. Oh, Lord. And I've been watching these Cut Print Film movies
forever.
All my life. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. And I've been waiting for this movie. Oh, my life.
Wow, that's longer than I remembered it being.
It's 44 seconds long.
Oh.
It's still going.
Boy, oh boy. I've been waiting to play that one again.
It's been a while.
I guess I'll go first since that was me.
Yeah.
I'm going to recommend a movie from last year. It was nominated for an Oscar. And once my computer logs in, it's called Leviathan.
Oh.
It was nominated for the Best Foreign from Russia.
It lost to Ida.
Yeah, which was an equally as... I think Leviathan is a more interesting movie than Ida, story-wise. And maybe better looking, which...
What?
Yeah.
Wow.
So this guy, see, I can't speak Russian, so...
Andrei the Giant?
Yes.
Is that what you're going to say?
I'm going to butcher his name. He's a director, a Russian director, Andrei Zivitskiy.
That's probably it.
Yeah.
Is it Andrei Zankiev from Street Fighter?
Just type in, Leviathan in IMDb. And
type in Hot Russian Brides and you'll get the director of Leviathan.
Okay, I'm going to read you the IMDb synopsis. In a Russian coastal town, Koyla is forced to fight the corrupt mayor when he is told that his house will be demolished. He recruits a lawyer friend to help, but the man's arrival brings further misfortune for Koyla and his family.
Okay, so this is like state versus man?
Yes.
Okay. And it's in Russia?
Yes.
Okay, so it's...
Oh my God. This movie, it starts out with like this jovial attitude, like kind of like, oh, fuck the state. But they're back at the house drinking and being very Russian. There's so much vodka drinking in this.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And not like in a stereotypical like, oh, they're Russian. They drink vodka. Like, and this is how they deal with life in this fishing town. But this director, whose name I can't pronounce, films in these massive wide shots that are like some of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. There's like four or five of them in the film, like really long, massive shots. There's one of a car pulling up to a building that, just saying that, it sounds boring, but while watching it, I was like, oh my God, this is incredible.
Yeah.
And then so that jovial tone from the beginning turns into this dreadfully bleak, like everything starts going wrong, and there's a court case in the beginning that's like where the attitude's kind of positive.
Yeah.
And then there's one at the end, it's kind of bookended by these two court cases. Mm-hmm. And seeing what a Russian court is like compared to an American one, oh boy. It's just a justicar, is that how you say that, or whatever that word is, just somebody reading like, and the state of Russia is against, they just keep reading and reading, and there's like no defense or anything, they're like,
oh, good,
finds him guilty, and it's like, oh, it is a depressing movie, but it's very, very good.
I meant to check that out. I never got around to seeing it. It was in and out of theaters in our city almost within 2 weeks, so I just never got to
It should pop up on Netflix soon.
All right.
Because it's great. Leviathan from last year.
Salamalamala, kalamala, and everybody's sucking sand.
Oh, my God.
Whew. I guess I'll go. My pick for this week is keeping in line with Vince Vaughn and the Vaughnissance that never was, is his 2001 vehicle. Movie called
In
Made.
The Intern?
Oh. No. It's a movie called Made, in case everybody didn't hear me. Directed by Jon Favreau, written by Jon Favreau, and starring Jon Favreau and his friend Vince Vaughn. It also stars Famke Janssen, who's in a lot of Jon Favreau movies. But this movie is about two aspiring boxers, played by Favreau and Vaughn. They're lifelong friends, and they get involved in a money laundering scheme through a very, very, very low level of organized crime. Puff Daddy is in it. He's absolutely hilarious in it.
I've heard this is very funny.
It's incredibly funny. Vince Vaughn is probably my favorite Vince Vaughn performance. He plays an absolute asshole. He's insufferable. And if you knew somebody like this, you'd pull their face apart with your bare hands.
Like the way he is in Fred Claus?
No, he's funny. This is a funny movie.
Oh.
This is a comedy. It's similar to Swingers, except he's not saying "you're so money" every 18 seconds and making me turn it off. So yeah,
I have very low tolerance for Jon Favreau.
This is such a guy movie, though. It's guys hanging out, but
I gotta see it.
The funny parts of this, what makes this a great funny movie, is just Vince Vaughn being the Vince Vaughn that made him famous, an asshole, and a sharp tongued asshole. And it's incredibly funny.
Ouch, I bet he cuts his mouth.
Yes, he has sores on the inside of his cheeks from that sharp tongue of his.
All right, you sold me. Let's start watching it.
Okay.
Right now.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's my pick. 2001's Maid, starring Vince Vaughn and Jon Favreau.
Salamalamala, kalamala, and everybody's sucking sand.
Chris?
Jeff, that pick was so money.
Oh, boy.
Was that from that movie, right?
I hope we get to that in the Jon Favreau director series.
I'd rather eat garbage. Anyway.
My pick is Iron Man 2.
So, in keeping with... in keeping with the Gulf Warfare hinted at in Zero Dark Thirty, my pick is 2005's Jarhead, directed by Sam Mendes. Director of Skyfall, American Beauty, Road to Perdition. Jarhead is a film that came out, and I feel like no one saw it for some reason.
I like that movie.
But it's very good. It's set.
This is about Archie's friend.
Yes,
right?
Okay. It's set in Riverdale. And
this is part of the Gyllenhaal essence.
Yes, this is an early Jake Gyllenhaal performance, but it hints that, oh, he's actually a really great actor, and he should be doing better films. So it was from 2005, and this is the brief synopsis. Based on former Marine Anthony Swofford's best-selling 2000 book about his pre-Desert Storm experience in Saudi Arabia and about his experiences fighting in Kuwait. And that's actually incorrect, because even though this is a quote-unquote war movie, there's actually no fighting in this film.
Yeah.
Literally, this film is just about how boring it is to be in the military when there's no fighting going on.
Jesus Walks.
Yeah, that song was in the trailer, Dave. it's got Jake Gyllenhaal plays the lead character. And basically, he's just this sort of fuck up. He's not really a good soldier. He's just in the army, and he's just there, and he's just trying to just get through the day. And it's just, I don't know.
It's a depressing movie because there's not a lot of growth.
There isn't. Yeah, there's nothing. It's basically, it's about just how these people in the military are just sort of like, I'm going to say idiots, but these characters are sort of like, they're sort of like dunderheads. They don't really, they don't have much intelligence. They don't have much growth. They're just there. And it's just, the tagline for the film was "Welcome to the Suck." And that pretty much sums up what it's like just being these guys. They're just in the military. They're not, there's no glory. There's no big battles. And it's just a sort of character film. I really like that. It's sort of similar to,
wasn't that the Boyhood tagline?
Welcome to the Suck in Boyhood, but I guess they're quoting this film, which is just strange. But it's sort of similar to what the hell is the Kubrick film? Full Metal Jacket, without that shitty Full Metal Jacket ending where they're suddenly fighting a sniper, which sucks. It's sort of pretty much the whole beginning of Full Metal Jacket stretched into an entire movie. So nice. Jarhead, 2005.
Well, it's been nice, but we gotta go.
Yes. That'll do it.
Yeah, that'll do, pig.
You can check us out on cutprintfilm.com. You can like our page on Facebook. You can tweet us at cutprintfilm. And you can check out some of our buddies, the Joystick Jerks. Yes. They're a video game podcast. You can find them on iTunes, Stitcher, or joystickjerks.com. Who else can you find out about?
Dave Costell. Go to davecostell.com.
That's not a thing.
That's not the cue I was giving.
Antifanboy.com.
That was it.
All right.
They're a podcast about pop culture, movies, comic books, video games.
They do a lot of news now, too.
Yes.
Comic book news and stuff like that.
Yes, they have a lot of new, like not just comic book news, movie news, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah.
On antifanboy.com. A lot of updates over there.
And as always, we encourage you to go to iTunes and give this very podcast a 5-star rating.
Yes. Tell us, wow, that was such a wonderful show. I listened to it 6 times.
Even if you don't mean it.
Yeah. If you're lying, we don't care.
Lie to us, baby.
If you lie to us, we hurt you.
No.
That was a line from Jared Arthur.
I know what you're doing.
I know, but we actually want lies. Go ahead.
We won't hurt you.
Yeah.
Yeah, give us those good reviews. They help us out. They get our show ranked higher in the movie podcast, because I don't know if you know this, podcast listener, but there are 75,000 movie podcasts. Yes. Not many of them are very good.
No. I think ours is good, and then there's probably another one that's good. I'm not sure.
According to Will, who wrote in earlier, there's 2 other ones that are just as good as ours.
But we'll never know what they are.
I don't believe it, Will.
One of them's Dave's Movie Cast. Welcome to Dave's Movie Cast, where we talk movies.
Would you stop plugging fake things that you're involved in? You have nothing in the fryer other than this podcast and website.
Yeah, that's true.
Coming out this week is nearly nothing.
Well, that's not true. There's a few things. There's Adam Sandler's The Cobbler, everyone.
About corn.
Which... I don't even know how to describe this movie. You'll have to wait for my review, which will literally be me typing WTF and giving it 10 out of 10.
Also, you'll have our review for Cinderella, the live-action Disney movie.
I've been hearing it's good, shockingly enough.
I won't buy that for $1.
All right. Give me that dollar back.
So, yeah, right. Check out all those things and more. I'm sure we have an interview with Brad from Pulp Fiction.
Yeah.
Say what again?
Yes, thank you, Dave.
Sorry, I stole your line.
No, it's okay.
All right, don't forget to tip the coat check lady on the way out.
Sorry. Sorry, everyone.